then tell me, Sean O'Farrell, tell me why you hurry so. Hush, you O'Farrell, hush and listen, and his cheeks were all aglow. I've heard orders from the captain, get you ready quick and soon, for the pikes must be together by the rising of the moon. By the rising of the moon, by the rising of the moon, for the pikes must be together by the rising of the moon. Oh, then tell me, Sean O'Farrell, where the gathering is to be, in the old spot by the river, right well known to you and me. One more roar for signal token, whistle up the marching tune, for your pike upon your shoulder by the rising of the moon. By the rising of the moon, by the rising of the moon, with your pike upon your shoulder by the rising of the moon. Out from many a mud wall cabin eyes were watching through the night. Many a man big chest was throbbing for the blessed warming light. Farmers passed along the valleys like the man she's lonely crew, and the thousand blades were flashing at the rising of the moon. At the rising of the moon, at the rising of the moon.
Greetings from the Northwest Homeland, comrades. It's September the 3rd, 2015. I'm Harold Covington, and this is Radio Free Northwest. Okay, first off, I'd like to thank the many comrades who attended our get-together this weekend here in the Puget area. It's always good to see you, and it's especially good to see new faces, of which we had a few this time. Unfortunately, our friend the trucker couldn't make it. He was out on the road delivering some exotic cargo to the far-flung corners of the Empire like he is most weekends, but we missed you, buddy. We're getting almost as many people coming here wanting to meet you as to meet me. It's been a while since I've handled any emails on here, so let's give that a shot. These came in via the party website, so I don't actually know where these guys are located, and I need to say again, the website is actually not the best way to contact me. I don't check it anywhere near as often as I should. Anyway, email number one. Hello, brothers. I have a few questions for you about the new nation. Question 1, Article 7, this presumably refers to the constitutional draft. Can you explain to me what you mean by medically certified mental defect or insanity? I think you might need some individuals who are on the border of insanity to accomplish the goals of your organization. I believe you may be excluding individuals who have an IQ of less than 90 and those with schizophrenia, autism, mental retardation, but if you could clarify the above-mentioned statement, I would appreciate it. Number 2, is your vision of the new nation a vision of white supremacy or white separatism? Well, that can be answered quite quickly, white separatism. You can't have white supremacy in a racially homogenous nation where there are no non-white people to be supreme over. Number 3, have you considered using a term like of non-Jewish European descent or coming up with a brand new term for a brand new nation? The terms Aryan or Nordic illustrate the power of using a term that at the time did not stimulate such socio-political unpopularity as the term white does today. In my opinion, playing the role of the oppressed rather than the aggressors is the only way to ensure longer-term success. Look at how the Jews developed their state. They played the victim. Number 4, the first article of the Bill of Rights should mandate at least one firearm per household. If the household does not have a firearm already, one will be issued to them by the government. Number 5, no abortion in situations of rape. Thank you for answering my questions. Signed, Caleb. Okay, Caleb, I'm going to spend a great deal of time and effort here today not answering your questions, at least not in any detail, and let me explain to you how this needs to start working. What you are asking me to do here is A, rewrite the 2006 constitutional draft document all on my lonesome, which I get a lot of, and which I don't do because it's not mine to alter. It was produced by a committee including ordermen like David Lane and Bruce Pierce, and also by guys like Rick Cooper and others who are dead now, and I have no desire to piss on these men's graves by saying, oh, I don't like that part now, I think I'll just change it and rewrite it. I'm not some kind of Führer or guru or dictator or whatever. That's not happening. We're probably stuck with that draft until the revolution itself comes. Secondly, what you're asking me to do, Caleb, is essentially crystal ball gazing. Now, don't worry, I get a lot of that too. Crystal ball gazing is one of the white nationalist movement's favorite pastimes. One of the many things that we do in order to avoid physical action, which might turn out to be risky and inconvenient. It's a kind of retreat into fantasy land, which is a place where white boys are very much at home, especially on the internet. It is geopolitically and biopolitically certain that the United States of America is going to break up into separate political entities just like the old Soviet Union did, if for no other reason than the fact that the present regime is too incompetent and inefficient to survive. When that happens, it is virtually assured that there will be some attempt by someone, hopefully the Northwest Front, to establish the Pacific Northwest as a separate nation. Actually a very old idea in our country's history, and we are preparing for that day to make sure that we come out on top and not those hippy-dippy Cascadia idiots. Now, we do not know precisely what is going to happen. It could be a quasi-IRA-style insurrection, like I talk about in my novels. It could be something really major, like the Spanish Civil War, the last war that the good guys won. It could be some kind of color revolution, pardon the expression, on the CIA pattern. It could be some kind of internal coup d'etat when the police and the National Guard revolt and roll into Olympia and Salem and Boise and clean up all those Democrat criminals in the expensive suits, so who knows? But whenever and however it happens, Caleb, at some point an event will take place that I describe at some length in Freedom Sons. A constitutional convention carried out by the revolutionaries who have torn this land from the blood-dripping claw of the beast and created the Northwest Republic. The present document on the Northwest Front website is only a draft. Then is when all of these specific questions will be decided, and those men and women are the ones who will decide what they want to be the basic law of the land and how they want to live their lives. It may be something completely different. Them, not you and me tapping on a keyboard before a single bit of actual, direct physical effort has been exerted. It may be that they follow the draft closely and implement pretty much the system of government described therein. I hope so, because we put quite a bit of thought into it. Or they may come up with something completely different. But that's their decision and not ours, because they will have earned it through physical courage in the shedding of blood, including their own, and we have not. Don't feel bad, Caleb. Like I said, I get this kind of thing a lot from people who want to engage in building a kind of online fantasy world. What you need to acclimate yourself to is actually turning off the computer and starting to load packed boxes into a car or U-Haul for the trip northwest. White boys need to stop retreating into fantasy, which I know is a hard thing to do, largely because it's such an easy thing to do on the ubiquitous internet, but we have to begin the process of kicking online fantasy and getting back into the real world. Next email. Hello, HAC. I assume you're the one who reads these messages, although I may be wrong. I'm a brand new listener and probably one of your youngest at the age of 16. I've got a very quick question for you, and I apologize if you've answered it before, but I can't be bothered with listening to every past Radio Free Northwest to confirm that it hasn't been answered. Well, fair enough. There are almost 300 of them now, and I'm always amazed when somebody tells me he's downloaded and listened to them all. Before I ask my question, let me say that I heard on your radio show that you don't plan on tolerating marijuana in your society if and when you establish it. If I understand correctly, the reason behind this is because it wouldn't be particularly helpful to the economy and will only serve to further degenerate the citizens of the NF. No, I'm not quite sure how you could have gotten that impression, Alec, and I don't remember saying anything like that, since it's actually the opposite of what I said in Freedom Sons, but anyway, to continue. My question is this: if you plan on outlawing marijuana and other drugs, do you also plan on outlawing alcohol and tobacco? If the answer to this question is no, please explain to me how alcohol and tobacco could help benefit the NF. I feel it would be hypocritical to ban marijuana while at the same time allowing your hedonistic comrades to slowly die of liver, heart, and lung-related diseases. Thank you for your time. Okay, Alec, obviously a mix-up has occurred here because none of these are actually my personal positions on anything, and I'm really uncertain how you could have arrived at that conclusion that I thought any such thing, but we'll let that go. My personal position on all this is that, yes, marijuana and booze and tobacco are health hazards, and using them is stupid, a stupidity I myself commit in the case of one out of the three. They are, however, part of our overall culture and tradition, alcohol since time immemorial, tobacco since the time of Sir Walter Raleigh, and marijuana since the time of pop culture, which, like it or not, everyone in this country has absorbed to some degree or other. Not to mention the pointless futility of trying to legally ban a plant that does not need to be imported or manufactured or processed, but which can be grown in the ground by anyone, as we've seen for the past 50 years. Now, I described how these issues would be handled in Freedom's Sons, my novel about the first half century of the Republic. However, I say again, all this is crystal ball gazing in a world that does not as yet exist. We cannot realistically make any predictions of any kind until we know how that world is going to come into being and what kind of resources and infrastructure and situation we're going to be dealing with. Now, I repeat that when the time comes, these questions will be settled by the men and women who have spilled blood, including their own, for the right to decide these issues in convention with their fellow white citizens of the Northwest Republic. Neither of us have earned that right, Alec. I am on my way to earning it because I am physically here in the homeland. I have taken the first step of migration, and that's the first step towards gaining the right to have a say in the future. How about you? Okay, this isn't exactly an email, but later on in this program, in a section you're going to hear, we are going to refer to a young man called Matt from California who sent me a brief audio file. I think this is a good place to slip it in. Just remember his voice when you hear his name later on, okay?
Hey, you got Matt here from California. Hey, I just hooked up my truck, unloading some cement into a silo. I thought now's as good a time as any to make a quick recording. So I've been listening to RFN, God, for a couple years now, while at the same time researching different nationalists out there, making phone calls, meeting people, watching videos. It's always searching, you know, like, what's the right thing for me and my family? And the whole time, you know, I've been listening to Harold and what everyone on RFN has to say, and agree with most of it for sure. But what I think I've been missing, just me personally, I'm hoping there's a bunch of other guys that think the same thing, and gals. It'd be really cool to hear other people come on there, even just make a quick recording saying, hey, this is so-and-so from wherever, and I'm in my 20s or 30s, got a wife and kids, whatever. And yeah, I'm also thinking about making the move. And for me, for my wife and I, we got a scouting trip scheduled for a couple weeks from now up to the Seattle area. I bought tickets for the Space Needle. It was a little pricey. It's even more pricey to eat at the top. So we definitely won't be having a meal at the top. But we're doing the Pike Marketplace. We're going to go check out the first Starbucks right there and give the enemy some of our money. My wife talked me into going and checking out the town where the vampire movies were filmed. I mean, we're going to make some fun out of the thing. I'm not bringing my kiddos, but, you know, it'll just be her and I, like, and we're going to meet with some folks up there and check it out and see if it's what we want. So far, I think it is, because everything I've heard on RFN, I mean, for the most part, it's like the only way that we can save ourselves, you know, and at the same time have some fun and enjoy life celebrating white culture together. Elbow our way in there just like we got elbowed out here in California and everywhere else. So yeah, I'm hoping this will catch on. Some of you other guys and girls out there my age, a little younger, a little older, you gotta let yourself be heard and let people like me know that we're not the only ones out there that are thinking about doing this thing. And we're a little reluctant, but at the same time, like, we gotta do something. We're not just gonna sit on our hands forever, so I guess that's about it. I could probably talk for a really long time. I just downed a fat cup of coffee. But I'll make it short. Anyone else who makes one of these little recordings, probably keep it short too. We'll just, I don't know, we'll connect that way and tell about our experience. For me, I'll probably make another recording after my scouting trip, do a little report on that, let you guys know how it went. I'm sure it'll be good things. We're looking forward to it, my wife and I. So anyway, I guess that's all I got to say. You all take care.
Okay, for our first music break, some more of that anonymous evil karaoke. I wish to hell I knew who was doing these things. I'd like to give them a proper shout out, because some of these are funny as hell.
He's a good girl, loves his mama, loves Jesus and Israel too. He's a good guy, wants to bomb Arabs, join the army, just waiting for his cue. And it's a long day living in America. There's illegals running through the yard, and he's a bad guy, as he tried to shoot him. He's a bad goy, 'cause he aimed for their hearts, and now we're bad! Bad goy, yeah! Yeah, we're bad! Bad goy, yeah! She's a liberal, wants free health care down at Wall Street. She's holding up a sign, and she's a good girl. Voted twice for Obama, but she's a bad girl for saying free Palestine. And now we're fired! Bad girl, yeah! Yeah, we're bad! Bad boy, yeah!
Bad boy, yeah, now we're bad boy, yeah, now we're bad boy, and now we're bad boy, and now
I want freedom and cut all the taxes. I think abortion is every girl's right. I want to end the racist war on drugs, but I don't hate that. My skin is white.
Now we're bad! Bad boy, and now we're bad boy, and now
bad boy,
bad boy, and now we're bad boy, and now
yeah, we're bad!
Bad boy, and now we're bad boy, and now
bad
we're
boy,
bad
yeah.
boy, and now we're bad boy, and now we're bad boy, and now we're bad boy, and
now we're bad! Bad boy, and no!
Bad boy, and now we're bad boy, and now
bad boy,
bad boy, and now we're bad boy, and now
yeah, we're bad!
Bad boy, and now we're bad boy, and now
bad boy,
bad boy, and now we're 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 bad boy, and now we're
comrades. Tonight I'm going to be taking a bit of a break from Arthur Kemp's March of the Titans, and instead, in honor of Harold's upcoming birthday, I'm going to be discussing Bonnie Blue Murder. I ended up finding this book on Amazon, and you can still get a lot of Harold's books on Amazon, although the physical books are now going into clearance because of the publishing situation. This book, which is one of the first books that Harold worked on and may actually be his first book, is set in Charleston at the very beginning of the Civil War, and it's dedicated to the defenders of Charleston. Now, it's a story about a certain Irish lord who ends up joining the Confederacy, and he goes by the name of Captain Redmond. He's charged with helping to investigate a murder that takes place on the night that Fort Sumter was fired upon. In this case, a Confederate soldier by the name of Calhoun is found dead, and there are some stolen dispatches, and that creates a great deal of concern because the information, of course, could be harmful to the troops. Now, most of the suspects in the story end up being members of an Orthodox Jewish community. It centers on one family in particular. Just as in any whodunit, there are a lot of twists and turns. The final answer is something of a surprise. I suppose I should not reveal that final answer, as it would be something of a spoiler. However, if I did that, it would be rather difficult for me to further discuss this book. And at any rate, I'm sure that the meaning of this book is not a simple whodunit, but of course Harold has certain ideas and messages to convey. It turns out that all of these various murders, and there are three murders, it all ends up transpiring because of the indiscretions of the daughter of the Mendoza family, Naomi. She is a Jewess who really is very eager to actually leave the faith, and she wants to assimilate into Southern society and become a planter's wife. Now, this is an ambition which, in hindsight, is really, you could say, short-sighted, because, of course, that way of life, which she so craved and was willing to do anything to get, would vanish after the war in any case. But at any rate, she's very much like her fraternal twin brother, who is also very much in love with the Confederacy and actually signs up to fight. In contrast to Naomi and her brother, who seem to be assimilationists, more or less, definitely more in the case of Naomi than her brother, but really both of them, the father is really extremely Orthodox and, in a sense, almost comically devout. One of the plot twists is the realization that Naomi has been poisoning her father. Ultimately, she's unsuccessful in this, but does him in all the same. Now, we also meet the character of Rabbi Klass, who must decide whether to hand over key evidence in the investigation, despite it conflicting with Jewish ethics. Now, the character of Naomi is such that I am really inclined to see her as a symbol. Naomi is, at most, probably somewhere in the vicinity of 20 years old, and yet she is a very diabolical and, relatively clever murderess. So as a result, it's hard to see her as an actual individual. Rather, I think she symbolizes the temptation of Jewish influence and the fact that this influence tends to be very ubiquitous. As an example, she causes Winthrop, who was a Yankee, and Breckinridge, who was a Confederate, to really start to fight one another. And I think that's symbolic of the idea that the Jews are a cause of strife and of wars. It also notes the importance of chivalry to Southern gentlemen when Breckinridge makes a gallant, if vain, attempt to cover for Naomi, who he was dating at the time without knowing her actual dark proclivities. Now, of course, if chivalry was ever misplaced, this is certainly an example. During the war, it turns out that Naomi's brother was killed at Manassas Creek. And it also turns out that Naomi is executed on the same day and at the same time as her brother. Just prior to being executed, Naomi essentially becomes a converso. And I use this term because she's a Spanish Jew. Even though she obviously is not going to be a planter's wife, as she had wanted more than anything, she still converts to Christianity because she wants her name to be remembered, and she knows that if she remains an Orthodox Jew, her name will not be placed on the tombstone, as she has been found to be a murderer, and that is a penalty afforded murderers within the Orthodox community. Now, after the war, Captain Redmond and also his co-worker, Legree, who has greatly helped to solve the murder and is always three steps ahead in terms of figuring out these crimes, they both go off and they move to Ireland. Now, this is really interesting because more and more as I get older and as I learn more about the Civil War, I very much get the sense that the Civil War was something of an extension of the Irish-English conflict extended into the New World, somewhat morphing in form. But at any rate, I see it as an extension of that conflict. It's also very interesting to note the character of Winthrop, who is a Yankee character, even though he ultimately joins the Confederacy to impress Naomi. It's also interesting to note that Harold has done a lot of research on Judaic terms for this book. I really do appreciate the fact that this book does not take forever to read. It'll be about 4 hours. If you buy the ebook version, it's really very inexpensive. Now, next week, I do plan to get back to Arthur Kemp, and this time I'm very excited because I'm going to be able to get into some of the more modern, more the 20th century. I think that's exciting because I do find the Second World War especially to be a very pivotal event, of course, and so I'm eager to get more on the road to talking about that and then eventually to getting into the modern state of affairs in Europe. So I thank you very much for listening. I hope you've enjoyed this little break and that you'll find it less tedious than March of the Titans can sometimes be. So have a good evening and hail victory, comrades.
Greetings, comrades. This is the trucker coming at you from Wyoming. It's a nice, peaceful drive. Don't have to worry about getting carjacked or truckjacked, as I'm not driving a truck. Don't have to worry about getting robbed. Don't have to worry about the knockout game. Don't have to worry about getting shot in a gang shooting. There's none of that up here. Granted, Wyoming is part of the fictional homeland, but still, it is a remarkable, peaceful day here. Driving across Wyoming, currently on Wyoming or US 287. Very little traffic, occasional motorcycles passing me going the other way, doing their migration, yearly migration to Sturgis. But right now, it's a nice clear day. There's a few high clouds off in the distance, and I can see the mountains. I think it's like 60, 70 miles off. It is just spectacular. I don't understand why you insist on living back east or wherever you happen to reside, listening to the occasional gunfire. About the only shot you would hear out here is maybe a hunter shooting at something, maybe somebody doing some plinking, or a rancher taking care of pest. Now, if you were up here in the homeland, you could help the rest of us, once we established ourselves, ridding ourselves of the pests. The niggers, the beaners, the jihadis. But no, you decide to live out there amongst the filth and wild animals. Like the ones there in Chicago that had 50 murders this past weekend. Or down there in the LA area where two rival gangs decided, okay, because one of their gang members was killed. Oh my God, good riddance to them as far as I'm concerned. But they have decided to retaliate and murder 100 people in 100 days. Just think, you and your family could be one of those 100. So why not get together, get it in gear, follow the Butler plan, listen to Mr. Covington, Andy, and the rest of us. Get your assets together and get your asses up here to the homeland. It is much more laid back and whiter than other parts of the country. So, this is the Trucker, signing off from a nice, spectacular Wyoming, waiting for you and your family to get together and get your asses up here to the homeland. All these motorcyclists seem to be able to make their migration to Sturgis yearly, but you won't rid yourself of the filth and come to the white homeland up here in the Pacific Northwest. We're waiting for you. What's the holdup? There's jobs to be had. Just ask Stefan and Annie. They made their migration. There's others that I've heard of that just recently migrated up here to the homeland, and we're waiting on you to make your migration. So, this is the Trucker, signing off from Wyoming, waiting on you to make your migration to the homeland. Carry on, comrades, and drive safely.
They say can't be done. We've got a long way to go and a short time to get there. I'm westbound, just watch a bandit run.
And this is Comrade Peter from Canada. I know that to a lot of us older hands, his comments about the Jews are going to be very much old hat, pretty basic. But bear in mind, Peter's pretty new among us, and it's always a thing of wonder and beauty to see a young man first discover the Jewish question on his own.
The Jewish holy book, the Talmud, says, "The Jews are called human beings, but the non-Jews are not humans, they are beasts." Hello, this is Peter McCorkle here. I once did a segment on the importance of the nuclear family before. However, I decided to do a regular segment on the Jews. Since the earliest days of Judaism to the 21st century, they have slithered their way into every area of influence into every nation of the Western world. Their hands have forged constant, unending problems to the white race. It is from the hand of the Jew, which wrote the Communist Manifesto, and the hands of the Jew that which have gripped the grip on our financial institutions. It is they whom have stood in our way since the very beginning of civilization. Whoever possesses a mild form of critical thinking skills and a basic knowledge of history of the Jews can see that they are not the victim to which they always came to be. They are not always forced into the financial institutions as so many people claim. They have always conglomerated into the financial centers of commerce, whether it be Alexandria, Rome, and the various Germanic kingdoms throughout the Holy Roman Empire during the medieval time. While it is true to a degree that we did not force them into financial situations, the truth of the matter is that we did encourage it. We encourage it because the banking requires a twisted set of morals, a twisted set of morals that cannot be found in Christianity. Instead, the Jews and their Talmudic belief system is founded upon the belief that anyone who is not a part of the Jewish race is not a person, and therefore can be treated like animals. The Jews have no problem taking advantage of their control of the financial institution, willingly lending money they knew kingdoms could not pay back in order to gain political control, or lending more money than what they knew a prince could pay back in order to blackmail him with that fact. Eventually, they would always went too far and held their grip far too tight, and they were always expelled, whether it's setting interest rates up to over 60% per week on loans, or being too public with their hold over the prince or king, and the people would rise up and kill any Jew they got their hands on. They would always slither their way back, however, mostly with a new regime came into power, and that regime needed money to fund their plans or wars. They welcomed the Jew with open arms, and Jew gladly accepted and always held a dagger in their hand. Their influence and dominations of banking held a monopoly over the institutions well into the end of the 20th century. Only now in the 21st century have they felt any resistance to their monopoly on banking and financial institutions. The ironic thing is that they have begun to meet their end to the very thing which they have helped create and spread. Liberalism. Liberal fashion is against Israel, and with the power of liberalism in full force, they find themselves in increasingly rocky positions. Though make no mistake, their influence and power is no doubt vast, just not as vast as it once was. The Jews' influence can be seen in all its power during the 1920s, 30s, and 40s. The Jews' influence within the British government is what led to the creation of the Balfour Declaration after all, which forged the modern state of Israel, or at the very least, its foundation. We can also see during this time the Jews' creation of the USSR and toppling of the Tsarist Russia. Vladimir Lenin, Leon Trotsky, and a majority of all the high command of the USSR's government were indeed Jewish. It was Stalin's right-hand man, who was also a Jew, who forged a death warrant to over 11 million Ukrainians via starvation due to food confiscations during the 1930s and 40s, as we know today as the Holodomor. Harry Hopkins, a man born from Hungarian Jewish parents, was Franklin Roosevelt's closest advisor, who was the head architect of the Roosevelt's New Deal and can be attributed to influencing Franklin Roosevelt into the Lend-Lease Agreement, which was the first step of American intervention in the Second World War against Nazi Germany and Japan. Why can they hold such influence? Why have they survived, despite angering every nation in history due to their crimes against them? Well, nations in the Western world, at the very least. The answer is that it is due to their racial religion. It says in the Talmud that anyone who breeds with a non-Jew is corrupted and should be shunned. So-called Jewish ghettos found all throughout Europe, throughout the ages, were the creation of the Jews themselves in order to actually separate themselves from the other non-Jews. This is why there are so much genetic diseases found within European Jewish genetics. It is largely due to inbreeding. Their ugliness, their twisted set of facial features is all due to this actual inbreeding. Comical enough. The race-based religion is what kept them afloat for thousands of years, and is bred into them a parasitic state of mind. Therefore, the Jewish question that arose in the 1800s was how we can stop them from conducting their parasitic activities. The solution, of course, was the forced removal from the countries for which they inhabit. All else was tried, from the Spanish attempts at forced conversion to the Germanic state's attempts at forcing them into the agriculture sector. In conclusion, the influence of the Jews has been parasitic, the antithesis of all white civilization. Well, this has been my segment on the Jews. The Northwest Republic prevails, comrades.
This is a timely new number from our British songwriter and singer, Arlen Brand. It's called Invasion Europe.
Thing, but what they really are, invasion only to me. I can't see no women, no children or diseased. All I see is young black men, invasion only to me. Invasion Europe, protect your borders. Invasion Europe, and lock up your daughters. Invasion Europe, the hordes of Africa are coming to your door. Destabilization of Libya, a nasty little kaiju plan. They help them cross the water and say welcome to our lands. Running across the fields of Kent,
heading for a city or town. Charities and lawyers, politician liars, invasion army to me. Invasion Europe, protect your borders. Invasion Europe, and lock up your daughters. Invasion Europe, the hordes of Africa are coming to your door. Invasion Europe, protect your borders. Invasion Europe, and lock up your daughters. Invasion Europe, the hordes of Africa are coming to your door.
On August the 27th, we had a Radio Free Northwest call-in show. Unlike the previous one where we got only one caller, in this case we actually got nine callers. We had nine people on the line at one stage in a kind of conference call on Skype. It was a very interesting and lively discussion. There's just one problem. Once more, the technical difficulties which have dogged this project from the beginning re-emerged. And we kind of reverted to the first show we ever did, whereby we were recording myself and Comrade Don, but we were not actually recording on our Audacity program any of the incoming callers. And so what we ended up with was just a long sort of recording of me and Don apparently talking to thin air. Now, we have fixed that problem. We should be doing one Thursday where we can hopefully do another proper call-in show for you. But in the meantime, I just decided we are going to get something out of all of that time that we expended on that show. So I put together sort of a montage, which may sound a little bit bizarre. It's just going to be me and Don talking to people that you can't hear. And so what you get is sort of a stream of consciousness, Samuel Beckett theater type performance of us addressing invisible people off stage. But at least this is one way for you guys to get your Harold ration. Been on there 49 minutes. That's somebody new.
That's not it. Okay.
Okay. All nine of you guys are still here. It's just we're not recording any damn thing, or at least not on your end. A lot of people want a radio call-in show like Blog Talk Radio or something like that, but then you get into basically issues of control, you get into people calling who just want to start trouble, who frankly don't have anything to say, and frankly undesirable callers.
And that's none of you.
Yeah, no, none of you guys, but that's one of the reasons I restrict access to the number, because there are frankly some people out there that I don't want calling. And if I were to post it on, say, the Thought Crime blog, you'd get niggers and everything like that calling, and some people seem to think it's fun to play with niggers on a phone, but I don't. You know, we hear enough of them every day. Mm-hmm. The problem is, this is something that it reflects on the party, and I have to exercise control over what goes out in the party's name. And if we were using one of these services that was using some kind of live streaming podcast, you'd get things going out involving the party that I have no control over, and that's just not a good idea, especially now that we're under the type of surveillance we're under. Ever since that stupid kid flipped out in Charleston, the ultra-lefties have been watching. I've seen signs of it other than their publicity back then, because some of them try to troll the website and that sort of stuff, and so I have to start exercising a lot more control as to what goes out over with the computer, because it will be used against us. The late Pastor Robert Miles used to say, don't ever put anything in writing that you don't want read out in open court. Well, now it's kind of, don't ever say anything into a microphone on a computer that you don't want played back to you in front of a jury someday. And that's why I had to do things like banning gun talk and that sort of stuff on there. I mean, it's totally harmless. White men talk about guns a lot, but again, if it is played back in some totally out-of-context way, then, you know, yeah, we know it. Well, in my books and otherwise, I've told people what they need to do about it, and if they're not going to do it, they're not going to do it, and we're all going to die. We're not going to exist anymore, so that's pretty much the name of that tune. We have the plan, at least when some alien historian from Alpha Centauri picks out some old computer bank or data server or something when he's excavating the Earth 12,000 years from now, and after they've run off all the Ooga Ooga black-colored savages that are roaming the ruins, and they, you know, start excavating and trying to figure out who these pale people were and what happened and whatnot, and they excavate some kind of computerized record, and they'll find an episode of Radio Free Northwest. At least they'll know that some of us understood what was happening. Some of us knew what the solution was. It's just the bulk of us just couldn't be bothered.
For those who came on later and didn't hear my little soliloquy, I'll just do a real short recap. The most important principle of survivalism, much, much more important than anything else, is to become a member of a group. If you have to, form your own group. But a group of people have much, much better prospects of survival than a lone individual or a lone couple. If you really want to survive, the first thing you need to do is join a group or form a group. Period. End of discussion.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And as I said earlier, the Northwest Front is actually the ultimate exercise in racial survival. We're talking about survival, and Don's made the point about group survival. We're lucky tonight we've got 8 people on, and does anyone have anything they'd like to discuss regarding either prepping, survival, or anything else going on in the country? I've noticed nobody's mentioned that reporter shooting in Virginia, which I find rather amazing, but... Well, this is a problem with local police that the lefties are upset about as well. You know, the police are being militarized and all this sort of stuff is kind of a dodge to get around the Posse Comitatus Act and act as an occupying army. And my worry about anything to do with so-called local law enforcement would be that local law enforcement is becoming so completely politicized in this country. That's one of the reasons that the government is loading up the police with all this military equipment, and these guys get to the point where they've got all this new fancy gear and all these weapons and all these armored vehicles, and they've been watching, you know, SWAT movies all their lives, and they think they're, I don't know what they think they are, but they're no longer local police. And of course, with federal money and federal equipment comes federal control. Now, there was an article in one of the local papers in Spokane a while back. Apparently, the Spokane County Sheriff is a real neocon ass. He actually invited the SPLC in to train his officers in the evils of us white supremacist separatist types, and apparently he has totally, completely drunk the Kool-Aid. The greatest threat in this country is white survivalists living out in cabins in the woods. Well, that's how white people live when we're allowed to live in these small towns and not be overrun with Mexicans and niggers and their political correctness and not being pushed around by Washington, D.C., etc., etc. White people can build their own communities and build their own relationships with the people in authority, and everything works out fairly well for everybody concerned. It's only when you've got these outsiders coming in and bringing in people who don't belong there, like 5,000 Syrian refugees coming to Idaho, and... Okay, what is the time frame on that? Have they given you any details at all as to when they're going to dump these wogs on you?
It's just another direct attack on the white race.
Well, you know, if those really are quote-unquote Syrian refugees, what they probably are is kind of like the Hmong from Vietnam, you know, basically the Hmong, the Montagnards in Vietnam were American mercenaries who fought against the Viet Cong and the communists, and basically when the Americans betrayed them and pulled out, the communists were coming after them and cutting their heads off and cutting assorted pieces of them off. That's why they were airlifted to this country and all stuck in Wisconsin, of all the places. And this is probably a similar thing with these Syrians. These Syrians are not most likely real refugees. They're either active guerrilla fighters and or clans of guerrilla fighters who have ended up on the bad side of Assad or the ISIS or whatever. And basically, if they stayed in Syria, somebody or other would be cutting their heads off. And so they were able to negotiate some deal to airlift them all out of Syria and dump them in the middle of Idaho. So it's not like these are poor, pathetic refugees starving, you know, yearning to breathe free that you're going to be getting there. What you're going to be getting is a lot of basically ex-CIA employees who ended up on the short end of the stick, and part of their deal was to be airlifted to the United States. Well, they almost admit that, that's part of it. I mean, they've gone into certain areas like North Dakota and Iowa and basically flat out said, this area is too white. We're going to give you some diversity whether you want it or not. And they brought in, like, St. Paul, Minnesota, Minneapolis, Minnesota. My God. In a way, I'm almost sorry for those poor damn Somalis who got dumped in the middle of a Minnesota winter. But what the hell are Somalis and Togolese Africans doing in Minnesota? It's insane. It's not fair to anybody involved. They are never going to assimilate. But the idea is to basically to break up Republican voting districts and break up white districts. And of course, the most insidious thing of all is this plan they've got coming up to break up so-called segregated housing patterns by essentially getting rid of zoning laws and putting housing projects in the middle of single-family dwelling areas. In other words, your neighborhood could have a big, huge, multi-story housing project going up anytime now. And there is no escape from diversity. This is why we're going to eventually have to fight. Because they just won't let us separate peacefully. They are literally going to jam these black and brown and sexually perverted creatures down our throats. It's like there's some city clerk out in Kansas or Kentucky or someplace who just flat out says she will not issue same-sex marriage licenses because she is a Christian and she's not going to resign her job either. And it looks like they're going to get her. They're going to eventually send this woman to prison for refusing to give her little blessing. It's like the two-minute hate in 1984. Everyone must join in the two-minute hate. You've got to jump up and down and scream and curse and whatnot and everybody must join. Well, according to the lefty libs, white privilege is the privilege of being allowed to live a normal life without thinking about race and gender and sexuality 24 hours a day, and that's pretty much how they define it. White privilege is the privilege of being considered normal. And so what these creatures want is normality. They want to become the normality. They want to become the template and make all of us abnormal. And they are pretty open about it. This is one reason I recommend people read things like Huffington Post and Salon Magazine, is because you can see the whole agenda just laid out right there. But yeah, that's white privilege, is the privilege of being normal and the privilege of living your own life without having to be forced to constantly think about race day in and day out and all of this politically correct stuff. In other words, white privilege is the privilege of being free of them. And they don't want us to have the privilege of being free of them.
By the way, someone, was it you, was talking about the fellow from Idaho, about action that's being taken by some people in Idaho. Is that an organized group whose name we might recognize?
Who exactly is bringing in these people? You say it's some university or something. Is there any identifiable body or group of people? This is one of the reasons I think our lives in this little tiny movement are so frustrating. It's one long litany of complaint, and the word that comes to mind is whining and moaning and bitching, and oh, it's so bad, look, they're doing to us now. Oh, it's so horrible. And everybody knows what we should be doing, and we're not going to do it, and I'm reaching some kind of late life crisis or something, but I've just gotten to the point where I listen to all this. I'm not talking about you guys specifically, just this whole thing. And I listen to people bitch and moan and whine and just say, oh, it's so horrible. And I just say, look, I've told you what you have to do. Now, either you're going to do it or you're going to lose. And people that look like us are going to cease to exist. That's the two choices. We kind of need something to break up this long span of drivel of me and Don just talking to non-existent people. And so I'm going to play this song now, basically just because I like it. This is Social Distortion. Okay, we've got another call here. Let's see. This is Radio Free Northwest. Who am I speaking with, please? Okay, Matt, let's get you into the call. And just about invite a group call. Okay, we have Matt from California here now. He is hopefully going to be up here in a couple of weeks doing his scouting trip. But Matt, just to clue you in on what's been going on, we are having some technical difficulties right now, and I am not absolutely sure that your end of the call is being recorded. But we do have 8 callers this week, including comrades from Mississippi, Arizona, Virginia, New Jersey, and so forth and so on. So, again, by way of introduction, Matt is a young married man, who is considering migration. That is actually what Don just stated several times over the past hour and a half. Yeah, that's it. And as I've said, the Northwest Front is the world's greatest exercise in white racial survivalism. Okay, I got that audio file that you sent me. I'm going to get you off a special email, given the itinerary that you and your wife are talking about when you get up here. I have a way that might fit in and how we can, you know, get together someplace here over, hopefully on our side of the water, because me and the city of Seattle just do not get along. But yeah, we'll hopefully see you up here in a couple of weeks. Well, I know that with the younger people, frankly, we have to go more for things like videos, audio, etc. So that's one of the reasons I'm working right now on at least an experimental recording of some of the Northwest novels on audio, because, again, no offense intended or disrespect, but the simple fact is that younger white people these days, many of them are, frankly, functionally illiterate, especially if they've gone to public schools. They can maybe read the TV guide and read the dollar menu in McDonald's, but as far as actually reading a block of text for content, actually sitting down and reading a book, a lot of them just simply can't do it because they were never taught how in school. Young kids these days, they grow up used to looking at little dancing images on electronic screens. It's kind of like a high-tech version of regression back to the caves when we were drawing pictures of animals on the wall, except now our cave walls are electronic and there's no writing So, yeah, I'm really impressed with the fact, as I mentioned on this week's RFN, that we're starting to develop our own technical capacity in our little movement, like some of these karaoke-style parody songs, but I've also seen primitive cartoons, primitive videos, even a few primitive dramatic-type movies. Jason from Oklahoma, I don't know if he's still on here. Jason, you still there? Okay, well, Jason's videos are really good. Well, I wish I could persuade him to do more of them, but... Look, guys, is there anything else that anyone wants to lay on me real quick while you got me? There's 6 of you left. Well, since I had my mini strokes back in 2004, I can't really get drunk anymore. But I really can't explain it except that I mentioned in that one article I read a few episodes of RFN ago, that when I left Chapel Hill High School that one day on my last day, I went up the hill and looked back at the place, and I just knew that I was going to spend the rest of my life making sure that no other white kid had to go through what I had to go through in that place. In the 3 years I spent there, I had been shown what my purpose in life was. I mean, this is not some sort of big revelation by an angel or a band of angels coming to me on a mountaintop and giving me a great revelation or anything like that. And just at some point, I just knew. I've just always had this idea that here in this world, we have a problem. Of course, well, it's a big, huge problem. It's got many aspects of it. But basically, the problem is the world isn't right. And before we can do much of anything by way of progressing or advancing in any way or enjoying ourselves or anything like that, I mean, it's simple. You got to fix the problem. There's not going to be anything for anybody if you don't fix the world. And for some reason, this is just always, I mean, since a very young age, I just always assumed that this was the case. I looked around and saw that nobody else was doing it. And so, well, I guess it's me. I know that sounds probably rather ingenuous, but I've never wavered from that. I've seen a lot of things down through the years that got me depressed and got me enraged and gave me the true passionate urge to strangle people with my bare hands and good mess like that. It's not like I can give you a guru's guide to maintaining your equilibrium in all this mess. You sit there and go, om, and om, and contemplate the witchness of what or whatever. All I just know is there's a job to be done. It's my duty station to do it. I could sure use some help. But if it doesn't happen, it doesn't happen. I suppose after all these years, I've become rather fatalistic about the whole thing. Bill White once wrote me from prison something which I don't really agree with, because he started out by saying that it is absolutely impossible for us ever to successfully resist or change anything that's going on, which I don't agree with. We could change this tomorrow if we wanted to. But what he says is that it is not possible for us to resist or to change the world, but it is possible for us to save our own soul. And that's the viewpoint that he is coming from, and maybe if I'd been in prison for the past 7 years on ridiculous crap charges like he has, I'd take the same attitude, I don't know. But it's just something I've always accepted that I have to do, and I try not to overthink it, put it that way.
Well, to respond directly to what you're saying, the National Socialists kind of grew out of World War I, so there was a large population of veterans of World War I, and they basically were the nucleus, and a very large nucleus, of people, very active people, who were the ones who ultimately saved Germany and got the National Socialists and Hitler into power in leading up to and really beginning in 1933.
Mm-hmm. Anyway, gentlemen, I think we need to wind it up. I would like to thank all of you for calling, and hopefully we will be able to put together some kind of recording from all this. I'm still not quite sure how well your end is recording. In any case, thank you very much, and keep on listening, and we'll get back at you with some kind of uploaded version of this as soon as we can, all right? Okay, our time is up for this week's edition of Radio Free Northwest. This program is brought to you by the Northwest Front, Post Office Box 4856, Seattle, Washington 98194. Or you can go to the party's website at www.northwestfront.org. This is Harold Covington, and I'll see you next week. Until then, Sasha Underban. Freedom.